or do you like technology? Or do you like talking to people? CJSF Radio is the place for you. Here at CJSF, the opportunities are endless. You can interview artists and bands, speak up for what you believe in, or even host your own show, and tons more. To find out more information, visit cjsf.ca.
Welcome to Teachings in the Air, an Indigenous health and wellness podcast that's meant for everyone, all of our friends and relatives. I am your host, Sahilthit, a.k.a. Jerry Oldman. Teachings in the Air with Sahilthit, a.k.a. Gerald Douglas Andrew Oldman. Today's podcast is going to be called Going Home. You know, and I grew up in a Roman Catholic environment, elementary school and high school. So I got to know Mass, High Mass, benediction, you know, praying, reading books about Christianity. You know, and a lot of that for me at the time was fear-based. You know, I was afraid of the devil and things that I'd learned. You know, and I had no idea of my people's beliefs and practices. So I wanted to call this podcast Going Home to encourage and teach those that are interested in learning about our way and how you can access it, how to go talk to knowledge keepers or elders or healers. Because I remember my anxiety when I got close to what I would call culture. For me, you know, at that time, it was music, like drum music. You know, I'd heard about it, but I hadn't heard it, that there was music. But I had no idea, you know, and, about the rhythm, about the beats, about the chanting. Like, I grew up with that identity, confused about, well, who am I? I'm called Indian. You know, and at the same time, I guess what pointed me in the direction of going home was elders telling me how it used to be when I was a youngster. They'd say words like Shkwana'am, the healer, the one that helps people. And what they would do, and they would tell stories about powerful Shkwana'ams, healers. My uncle was telling me one story, the Shkwana'am, he went to visit the Shkwana'am, and the Shkwana'am was making medicine, making a bundle of medicine. Who's that for? Oh, that so-and-so is going to be coming asking for medicine. And that was from another village over, which is, if you're going by horseback or walking, 2 or 3 days away. So my uncle wondered, how did he know that person's coming to get the medicine, wants the medicine? And he even knew what the infliction was or what was wrong with the person. And, you know, we do it now with a cell phone or a computer. You know, we can connect with each other. These healers were doing it over distance with their mind and their spirit. You know, and so I'd hear those stories. And I'd hear about the medicines in the sweat lodge, but not like when I was in school. You know, we'd start with a prayer, you know, we'd start our morning praying by our bed at mealtime, you know, and we'd go to church. So I was doing that. And you think about that, you know, for 12 years of my life. But somehow it didn't resonate with me. I felt there's always something missing in my life. So I didn't even go looking for it. I had no idea. I thought all the powerful cultural people were in the United States or back east, you know, because I didn't hear it or see it in my own nation, 11 communities. Then, that's how long it took. I know I was probably 25 years of age, and I heard one of my elder relatives playing the hand drum with passion, with like a performance. And I remember how mesmerized I was. And I was saying, that's ours. It's our music. It's Statlium music. And started to wake up this little fire inside of me to want to do that. So I guess you could say I put it in my memory bank, the file in my brain called culture, you know, and I carried on in life, you know, working, drinking. A couple of years later, I stopped. And then I started to become connected to the music. One of our chiefs was doing research in Ottawa on land claims for our people. And he's listening and listening to these recordings. And he came upon elders singing our music. And he transcribed them onto cassette tapes. And he came home and he passed them out to us as young men. Said, here's our music. Oh, I listened to that over and over and over again. Our music. My relatives singing. You know, that was... it was a very wonderful gift that Chief gave us. Because it started a revival. Now we see more than one hand drum. More than four or five people chanting. It started to grow. But I remember in that part of the journey around music, we were doing activism. We were blockading a road in Montcurie around fishing rights. I pulled in to set up camp, and there we set up our tent and our cooking areas, you know, and learned where the washrooms, everything were, you know. It was a wonderful setup. And I remember when we drove in, they had security, our people security, young men. They stopped me, and I had a truck full of people from my community. And they came up to the guy, comes up the window, you got any alcohol or drugs? No. Well, I'm still going to get you all to get out, and I'm going to check your vehicle, he says. It's the elder's law here. I says, okay, you guys get out. So we all got out, and they went through our stuff. And then he told us where to camp. Is that a friendly man, though? Friendly security. So we camped, and then we're all set up. Then I hear these drums and these voices. And then sometimes you'll hear people say, oh, it's like the hair on the back of my head stood up. You know, that's the way it felt for me. And I say, whoa, and I immediately started walking. And there was this group of men and women standing around a fire, and there were men with hand drums, and they were chanting. And they were from all over British Columbia. There's a Nuchanath man, Shuswapmuk, you know, Coast Salish, you know, these people that come together, these young adults that started a movement of going home to our culture. It's the first Nuchanath song I heard from there. He was sharing it with us. I still hear that song in my head. It still resonates with me. And they're singing gambling songs. And I remember I standing away from that circle of beautiful human beings. You can see their eyes were clear. Their posture was good. They were Uchomiucha. They were original people. And I standing there, and one of the men seen me, and he nods his head like, you know, point, like shaking his head one way, like calling me. And I pointed myself, me? He nods. And I go over and he says, join us. I said, I've never sang a song in my life. He says, well, you'll learn, you stand with us. And you'll catch on and you'll become part of it. Oh, you know, I had a fear of going there to join that circle because I had never touched a hand drum. I'd never sang a song. And I thought that I'd be rejected because of that, that I was poor. But no, and I looked around, they're smiling, you know, and they keep on. Oh, it was such a beautiful feeling in the nice sky, nice fire. Beautiful people, all chanting. And I started to catch on. I remember I started joining and I made a mistake and I noise come out of my mouth and it was in between the verses, I guess. And they laughed and looked at me, but they're nodding their head. They acknowledge that I made a mistake and it's okay. Because you got to know, at that time, my insecurities were very high. My self-confidence wasn't there. My self-esteem, my value in myself wasn't there the way it is today. So when you see an activity like music, ceremony, or a circle, don't be afraid to advance upon them. You could wait like I did and someone will see you and usually they'll invite you in. If not, it's all right. If they don't chase you away, you can just be an observer. Don't get so sensitive that you think, oh, they don't want me. So at that same gathering, I went to a sweat ceremony. Wonderful Cree man from Alberta built this large sweat. So I went, and I remember my fear sitting outside. And I had never been to a ceremony like this, with a man with a pipe sitting there with these long braids, you know, just so obviously indigenous. Talking to his helper in Cree. And we weren't speaking the language that much in Stantium territory at the time. You know, to watch these two having a conversation, laughing, you know, in their language. It even heightened my insecurity. And I remember he says, okay, it's time to come in. And we go in. And he's sitting there with his medicines around him. And he talks to us. He says, I'm so glad you're here. I know many of you have never done this, but it's for you. I want you to know that. You know, like the door is closed and it was dark in there. He says, I don't want you to worry. You belong here. And I remember it relaxed me and I was smiling. And he says, I can sense some of you smiling now. That's good. You know, just like you could see in the dark. And he was very perceptive, very grounded. And he would pray in his language. He says, I know that you don't know my culture, my language. So my nephew here is going to interpret it, my prayer, so you know what I'm doing. Oh my gosh, he was praying in his language. His nephew would translate for us. You know, and then we'd finish the round and I'd open the door, close again, and we continue. I remember at the, I think it was the third round, he was praying and he was weeping. And the nephew says he's praying for his grandchildren and great-grandchildren and the ones behind those ones that he's not going to see, that he has worries about them. And that resonated with me so much, to see this man, hear this man with tears, worried about his family. It shook me. I said, I want to be like that man. I want to be like that man. So it set up another thing in my file about going home to find that kindness, that care, that compassion for other human beings. So we left there eventually. Then I started traveling. I became an addictions counselor. Started traveling. And I remember the first group of addictions people in the province of BC. We realized that many of them come from hereditary families. You know, that they stepped forward to help the people. So we came up with the words that culture's healing. So that's truly about going home, about using medicines, using music, using dance, using ceremony to help ourselves and to help each other. That was the intent that we came up, an intention. Because as a group, we would draw huge pictures or collage or poster of what would be good for our people, what would help our people heal. And there was pictures of longhouses, of sweat lodges, of different things that would help the people. And it was all culturally based, grounded in our culture, our way of life. We were thinking at that time, I was 27 years of age, and we recognized the value of our culture, our way of life. Because remember, Sahilthut was indoctrinated into Christianity, and they wanted to assimilate me into their way of life. And part of that assimilation was the language, so I was speaking English. And that's been one of my insecurities, the time when I go to ceremony or when I speak to people in ceremony, and if I'm not using the language, I get that sensitivity or that worry or some stress, you know. And I heard the word imposter syndrome. And I said, yeah, I felt like that at times because I don't speak the language or I don't understand the ceremony. I'm an imposter. But, you know, when we have our knowledge keepers and ceremonial people, the ones that I knew that were eventually trained me, they're all kind people, and they knew they're there to help the people help themselves so they can live in harmony in their families and communities, and most of all, to take care of the earth. To discourage people from being greedy, taking too much salmon, too much deer, too much, you know, because they're greedy. That was discouraged. You got too much, you give it away. So you don't start hoarding, you know. That's part of the going home. And the ceremonial people kept those ideologies alive. Those systems. So I eventually started to reach out. And I do it simply by showing up. I say, oh, they're going to have a ceremony, for instance, like in Penticton. And I would drive there. And I'd show up. They'd welcome me. Oh, come on. Winter dance. Okay. So I learned to sit and be quiet and just watch. Then see what I could do. Help with the kitchen, you know, do whatever, you know, or just listen and be a witness. So I learned just to watch, and I learned so much just by being quiet. So it's a wonderful way of life, this indigenous way of life. And then I learned it's okay to go ask for specific teachings and always bring a gift. Always. Because you cannot buy that teaching anywhere. You know, from these elders, knowledge keepers. And they'll let you know if they can share it, because some things just belong to the family, only to the family. So things for a public, you can go, and I would go, like one example, I'd go see this elder. And I brought him and his wife once a case of canned salmon. And I wanted some knowledge. Happy, they're happy, you know. The wife was really happy. Oh, her eyes lit up. Case of sockeye. The old man laughs, nods his head, and start to get the teachings. So you learn to do that, and don't ever let one rejection stop you. Because sometimes, you know, especially with our elders, sometimes they're just not in the mood for teaching. And I understand that more and more. Like I've recently, you know, had a bad knee and it hurt. It was aching. And I didn't feel like talking to anybody. You know, I go down the stairs, you know, like sideways or backwards. You know, so you remember that. I mean, they're elders you're going to see. Sometimes they might have some arthritis or something. But just go sit with them. Even if they don't teach you, let them know that you honor them and you respect them and you hold them in high regard. I would go play cards with elders. You know, the elders that I used to hang around used to love playing crib. So I go play crib with them. 15-2, 15-4, 15-6, and the rest won't mix, you know, doing that, doing the counting and stuff. And I remember one, I'd get 16, and the elder would say, loot, cast, it was an Okanagan. And he said, that's not good, he would say, he'd laugh. Then next thing you know, I'm getting a teaching about an herb or a medicine that we can pick. So it just started to come out naturally. So patience is part of this when you go for teachings. But don't delay, especially if it's in your own nation with your own elders, because we never know when someone's going to leave. You make a time. I learned a very hard way. You know, my grandmother, my late grandmother, Shatit, after I sobered up, she sent one of the young men she raised as from a boy up, because he was like an orphan. And I was down in the fishing camp, and he says, "Mom's ready to teach you now everything, creation story, medicines, everything." "Oh, good," I said. "I'll tell her I'll be there in a couple of weeks after I finish drying salmon." A week later, I got the message, "Jerry, Mom's gone." I said, "Oh, jeez." So if someone wants to give me a teaching, I'll drop everything and I'll go. That's a harsh teaching, but it's in me now, and I pass that on to you. And it could be about food, it could be about ceremony, it could be about music, it could be about names. We have in our home culture, we have everything needed to take care of the human being. About woman time, about men, about teething for babies, you know, all of those, we have answers for them. So I wanted to do this podcast called Going Home to encourage you to go home to your culture and also to support other cultures, like I support other cultures by going with them in their longhouse or their teepee or wherever they are and sit there and support them in quietness. And if they ask me to speak, I'll speak. So that's what I would like you to meditate on, about going home. Because in our culture, there are coping mechanisms, the ceremonies, I call it no-talk therapy, that will start to help you to be who you are, to accept who you are, to accept who I am. Who am I? I was asked that question early on in my journey. "Who are you, Jerry?" And I'd say, "Oh, I'm a Seton Lake Indian Band member, you know." "No, who are you?" "Oh, I'm a dad, you know." "Oh, no, who are you?" You know, they kept asking me. Till I say, "I'm Statlium. That's who I am." You know, so I have such a respect for all the ways of life and North America, that means culture. Their music, their dance, their food, how they do things. And my Statlium culture. You know, those good messages that come on how to live together in harmony, not fight each other, not gossip about each other, but support each other. I felt that as a youngster. The days I go in the house and they're going to feed me. And if they come to our house, we feed them. So if somebody walks in the door, or my mom or someone's making tea, it's the first thing, you know. So let's all go home. If you're already going home, great. If you're wondering if you can, you can. You can say, "Sahil that told me." Like I got power over you. I don't. But you can say, "Yeah, I heard this message. I can ask. And if the time's not right, I must accept that. And go try again. Do it again. Don't give up." So it's, I wanted to do this because we had a little event and people were asking questions. So I thought I'd do one on going home to our way of life, how we lived as indigenous people, and the teachers, knowledge keepers. Some of them been raised in it since they were babies. Some inherited teachings. I was taught how to protect buildings, cars, drums, different things. I was taught how to do those things. The teacher, I'd done my best, because they say it's not about money, Jerry, so My friend and I would give blankets, give canned fish. We'd find out what they want, need.